session number 22353, Reel 3.
Eric Warburton, Reel 3.
Victorious being the producers of smoke and not a little oil and discharge of fuel, etc., or whatever, these lads went down there, got into the water, came out looking like niggers. That's not the right word to use these days. They were black all over. And of course, they had a job to get them clean again. But that was one of the funny sides of the life down there. Of course, there was nobody knew what was going on the floor above or below, and everything was very tight security. And it was all a matter of doing the job it was supposed to be doing, and getting this hospital prepared, and away it went. We spent 6 weeks and then went back again to into the area. Smith was one place we were at, and the other we moved on to a place was at Dr. Castle's hospital for neurotics in Petworth.
Were they neurotics because of the war?
I don't know what they were, but I think they it was a private hospital before the war, and it had a remarkable arrangement for padded rooms, where I remember were very well equipped for putting people in, and those of course one all finished up in a padded cell, if you like, to be. If you had that sort of inclination. And so I find myself now getting interested in skin diseases, because that was the reason for setting up this hospital in this place.
Petworth?
Not Petworth, I recall.
You mean you set up a skin disease hospital in the hospital for neurotics?
No, not for neurotics. It was used for neurotics, but we were now making a skin hospital of it.
You've taken it over?
Yes. You have to stop this whilst I think of the name of this.
Was it in Kent or Sussex?
Yes, Kent.
Petworth's in Sussex.
It was in. Oh dear.
Well, it might come back to you later.
I can't remember, yes. Anyway, so there's a castle that, and of course it's between Tunbridge Wells and Tunbridge. And so we had a very interesting time there, because we were experimenting with three types of treatment. That is either treatment for impetigo, in particular. That was a very rife thing amongst the troops, and so they had either gentian violet, or we were doing a mixture of various other materials which would make either yellow or green or purple people. So you had all these various people, coloured various people, in going to do it.
Why should impetigo have been a problem for troops?
It was a skin disease, and for some reason or other, mainly, I think, lack of certain vitamins, and they hadn't got around to much to talking about vitamins in those days. And so we had this problem of the chappies that they usually occurred on the face, and so it was very obvious that they had this problem.
So it wasn't through unhygienic conditions?
No, I think it was a lack of vitamin C, I think, in those days, if had we have known. But anyway, it was quite a large Dr. Castle's home at Swalens, Penshurst is the name of the place, in Kent, and we stayed there quite a little while, but in the meantime had shifts down into another stint down in Dover, and so it was, but it mainly doing the same job down in Dover. And so he did about 6 weeks and came back again. And so they went to, we had just a very interesting stay at Penshurst. Also we had the RASC with us still, and they were just trading just the same as we were. They were either keeping maintenance going and all things of that nature. But we had an officer who was the RSC officer, who was a sort of dodgy character, really, and I can't remember his name. And so he had a problem where petrol was missing from his vehicles, and there was outside the house. The main house, Dr. Castle's home was a really terrific place. And then we had a wooded area where all the vehicles were left overnight in amongst the trees. And the idea being that we're getting used to being camouflaged these days. And so this was all part and parcel of the job. And the RASC did guard duties, and the RAMC personnel, who were not involved in anything else, were doing sort of fire pickets as well amongst these areas, these trees as well. And this petrol situation became very difficult because it had been stolen, and roughly about 4 gallons a night. And so there was an investigation, and this man had everybody in who had been involved in either fire picket drill or guard duty or whatever, had everybody in and made in-depth investigations as to what was happening. And nothing was discovered as to why, and until one occasion somebody found a can of petrol, a jerry can, way up there in by the red, the Spotted Cow, I think it was, that was the particular pub, and a watch was put on this, and this officer and his batman driver would make the journey out there, and he was caught depositing the full cans and taking away the empty cans himself. And that was one of the major things that happened in that particular case. So otherwise, life at Penshurst was very placid, and was down to a serious job of trying to bring relief to these people, these patients who were suffering from impetigo in particular. And it was strictly a skin disease, and it was very useful to know how to deal with it and what sort of precautions were being taken and all that sort of thing. All as part of the job, and I thought that was very useful.
So what was the source of vitamin C that was recommended for the deficiency?
Well, I don't know how they overcame the all that we had was to deal with the problem, that is, it had been manifested by these spots, you know, it's very infected spots, and they started with the ear, usually in the ear, and it came down, made an awful mess of there. But the deficiency of it was only my assumption, and that I think that was probably one of the major. And they had, of course, decent food, and eventually it was cleared up. But it's quite interesting to see that they were, how they responded to these various treatments.
What was applied to it?
We had this gentian violet, which is a purple spotted, you dabbed them or painted them, really. And they were then the other was acriflavin with some M&B powder mixed together. And then there was a green substance as well that we used, but not as popular, or not as the results weren't as good as the other two. So we had mainly yellow or gentian violet faces. It was quite something. But otherwise, that was it. You know, then life went on normal from that onwards.
But these applications worked, did they?
Oh yes, they worked it, and they were very successful. And then we moved on. Of course, we were in, and generally we became almost like the Kent Home Guard, I think. But we went again to. We had another session in Smead and another thing, and we generally moved around in that area. Then I think this time I thought that we went down to Chartham in Kent, which was just outside Canterbury. And there we found things were hotting up, because on one occasion whilst we were down there, the incendiary of bombs on Canterbury were brought into being and created that havoc down there one night when they set Canterbury alight.
Did you go into Canterbury?
We didn't. We were held back from going in, actually in case as a sort of backup for the people in Canterbury. But we were not called into Canterbury itself. We went the next day, but during the night we didn't go in. And so we were really kept out of Canterbury.
How did people feel about the bombing of a place like Canterbury?
I know, and had no connections with the population, and I think that's I don't know the reasons why, but we weren't encouraged at all to go into Canterbury. But of course there were hoses all over the place, and it was a matter of keeping this place in. The fires were in check, or however they did in the end, but it was obviously a very sad occasion for Canterbury when they had this dose of incendiary bombs. At that time, I was now sort of getting involved very much in the medical side, and training. Both literally and by books and whatnot, and by the lectures and by some menial tasks an O1 could do in the hospital side, because we formed a cottage hospital this place at Chartham. It was at Kenfield Hall, actually, and that was about 3 or 4 miles away from Chartham. And so we On that occasion, we were then given training for driving ambulances because the ambulance drivers, the RSC people, were getting a bit cheesed off with driving RMC personnel around, etc. That was interesting.
Why should they have been cheesed off of it?
Oh, well, you know, it's usual banter, you know. Why should I always drive you around? It was their job to drive and your job to do the medical side. But I had one particular driver who was particularly difficult and got this chip on his shoulder that, you know, he should be taking life easier and you should be doing some of the driving and all that type of thing. And so by this time I was back onto ambulances, and we went on a an exercise which took us down to Salisbury Plain, and there we had a real casualty. And I was selected to be the ambulance to go, as it were. And so we collected this man and took him, had a broken leg, and we took him to Didcot or something of that nature. And so we delivered him to the hospital, and on the way back, this man started to create a bit by, you drive, you're comfortable, you drive, you let me drive, I'll do this. So I said to him, I said, look, you think I should drive this vehicle? So he said, yes. I said, all right, we'll stop the vehicle. And so we stopped the vehicle, and I got on into the driver's seat, and he came around and sat in the passenger seat. What it was in those days, and so I started up and we drove, and we've been going quite a little while, and through various villages, and suddenly he said, well, how long have you been driving? I said, how long have I been sat here? And he said, stop the vehicle, you have been court-martialed. So that was the end of that particular thing. But I had driven this vehicle, and that was the first and only case that I had. So as a result of that, they decided that they would give instruction to the ambulance personnel, the ambulance orderlies, in driving the vehicle, which was very useful.
So you frightened him, did you?
Oh, yes, I think so. Yes, it really put him in a difficult spot. So, nothing else. We lived in three little, some of us lived in three cottages called, wooden huts, really. They were called Faith, Hope and Charity. And they were very primitive. But nevertheless, we enjoyed our stay there. And then I decided it was time I got myself the second stripe. And so I went on a course to Maidstone, to Barming Heath Military Hospital. And this course would result in one being qualified in the army terms as a first class nursing orderly, NO3, I think they call them. And so, and you then, you were able to wear these two stripes now, two red stripes, on your right cuff. And an important position that was. Once you'd done that, then you were qualified to do anything as far as the army was concerned, in terms of medical, that is. And so I went to this hospital and reported there, and armed with a book, Hughes Manual, there it is. And so I arrived, and there was nursing sisters. I'd never seen a nursing sister before, but there were nursing sisters. There was a matron, and there were VADs. And most of the girls of the VADs were very well familied. You know, they were very well, came a very well, good fact. People who were well, school. I think some of them were the Rodine type of girls. You know. Anyway, and they said to me, "What's that?" Well, I made my first day appearance, and I said, "It's my Pew's Manual." So they said, "What's that for?" And I said, "I've come to study and to get through these, get my NO1 or NO3, whatever it's called." So they said, "Oh, well, I should throw it away." And I said, "But I'm here to study and to do this job." And you had so many months at in the medical, and so many in the surgical, and some experience in the theatre, although you didn't participate. You were able to go in there and see what was what. So full stop. So the result was that they had no real conception of how serious I was taking this matter, and I wanted to get two stripes and two medical stripes, and that's how I wanted to be useful in this direction. I didn't know to what use this was going to be, but never mind. It was the thing that I wanted to do, and progression, as far as I was concerned, in my career as a medical person. And so I did went into this ward of surgical treatment, and I didn't like the way that I could get on with doing various things.
Where is this hospital?
At Barming Heath Military. It's in Maidstone. And it's still there, as far as I know. I don't know, but anyway, it was a very spread eagle place, and I think it's all Hutter's accommodation. I thought it was, and it was certainly all on one floor, on the ground floor. And so I worked this out, and I thought, now if I can do certain things, if you wanted to learn, you've got to get this, stop the sister from doing it all herself. And so I worked out that she would say to one nurse, put a screen around that bed or that patient, and then, which would be done by one of these VADs, she'd put it around, and then somebody else, you would say, "Oh, get a tray ready for removal of stitches or whatever." And whatever she was going to do, and which was done, and then she would disappear and do this job herself. So I thought, well, the way to do this is to, when she's got it all sorted out and she's going to go in, then I will go in with her and I'll learn how to do it. And so that is exactly what I did. And as soon as I went in behind the curtains with her, she would say, I better show you how to do this," which is exactly what I wanted to know. And so this worked out very favourably. And one of the amusing parts, of course, was that I, on one of the occasions with this same sister, said to her, it was Sunday, and I said, "Well, I would like to have the opportunity of some time to go to my own service in Maidstone. Would she allow me the time off?" She proceeded to tell me a lecture, in fact, on the devotion to duty, which was the main theme of that. She said, "No, this was the main theme of nursing, and that when she went into nursing, she gave up all these things, or they became secondary, and therefore the answer was no. And so I didn't, that was it as far as I was concerned, except that I observed the rules, I never asked her again. And so one occasion we went in, followed her in to do some work on a patient, and so she said, well, this is, we've got to remove 48 or whatever it is, 45 or 48 stitches, because this man had a dual duodeno. And so she said, you'd better do it yourself. And so, of course, under my instruction, so, and one had the kidney tray, and for the one side and for the other, and very carefully laid the, all the, took the stitches out, and because these were suited stitches in those days, that is that they weren't got clips like they use these days, and so each one had to be laid out, and you had to be able to count them so that you didn't leave any in. And so this was interesting, and we got about halfway through the second side, and of course the time was going on, and it was Sunday, it wasn't Sunday, and it was and so every day, of course, at a certain hour, the ambulance used to take the sisters down to their place of living for their meal, their midday meal. And so there she was with me in taking these stitches out of this patient, and she was getting a bit sort of looking at her watch, and I said, oh, it's perfectly all right. I said, I will do the job properly. She was then hopping off one foot on top on the other, getting very impatient and looking at what. And I said, if you don't go, you'll miss your, the ambulance will go without you for your meal. And with this, she said, I said, I remember somebody telling me some time ago about devotion to duty, and I said, my devotion to duty doesn't, time is irrelevant. She said, all right, Warburton, touche, we'll be good friends. And I said, yes, we will. And I had a very good time in that, in the rest of my time in that surgical wards of that that hospital. And I don't, one never knows, of course, what results. The results on the your report from the ward sister about your ability and your knowledge gained, and your and then it's passed on to the matron, and the matron does a recommendation that you should or shouldn't be become a nursing order with a second stripe. And I then that was a very good start, and so I did my stint on the surgical, and in the midst of this, of course, there was a little period of going into the theatre, and you weren't really expected to do anything. You were there to observe, so that you'd see what was going on. And I remember my first trip into there was I was looked upon and sort of as a sort of interloper, I suppose, really. And but the surgeon was sort of told who I was, and he said, "Oh, well, stand over there and watch." So I stood over there, and I stood against a wash basin. And I didn't tell Phil Creer as he started to perform his job. And I remember grabbing hold of the basin behind me, which almost felt as it were going to melt in my hands, as it were. But it was just the feeling, and I got over that, and after that it was all right. But there was nothing to do except to watch and to observe what the various jobs of various people, and that was the really what every trip into theatre was for. You weren't there to participate in the work. Then there was the time for doing the medical side, and that was also very interesting.